Actually, good afternoon. First of all, I'd like to thank Johnny and all the lads for asking to come along. I was kind of like raised, I was being raised by Johnny, he was on his bicycle one day, and he asked me what I say a few words. The topic I picked, and I picked it deliberately to give an example of how busy and how important the port city of Waterford was in the kind of 19th century. What I'm going to be talking about is shipping consulates in Waterford. Now, what's that? Basically, today when you think of the word consulate, you think of an embassy. Consulates back then were more like offices that concerned themselves with maritime trade. So this was all about trade, it was all about business. Okay? So first of all, what's a consulate? The first consulates were actually in ancient Egypt. In the 6th century BC, the Egyptians gave part of the city-state of Naucratis to Greek merchants. The Greeks were based there. They're exempt from Egyptian law, and they dealt with trade between Egypt and Greece. Okay? So kind of fast forward a bit slightly. By the 13th century, Jack Burchell mentioned around the Venetians. In the 13th century, when we were building the stone walls of Waterford, we were around whacking each other over the head with sticks, the Venetians had 30 consulate officers based all over Europe, and they concerned themselves with Venetian maritime trade. Okay? Now the heyday of these consular officers and these guys was in the kind of 18th, 19th century. This is the year of deep blue water trade, transatlantic, transocean trade, okay? And I'm going to concern myself today with shipping consulates in Waterford in the 19th century, okay? So first of all, who were these guys? They were all Waterford businessmen, okay? They spoke the language of the country they represented, and their job was, if you were a Danish or an Italian sailor or a captain, if you got in difficulty or you had a problem, you went to see these guys and they'd look after you, okay? That's really a mark of exactly how important Waterford as a port was. Every major foreign power in the world had a guy in Waterford, okay? So, who were they? Before I explain who they were, I'm going to explain how they were paid. Because it's kind of important for most of them. There's two different business models for these guys. The traditional English model, which they were paid a fee, the gentleman's agreement not to involve themselves in the trade of that nation, okay? So they wouldn't kind of, I suppose, get caught up in kind of mixed loyalties, okay? Yeah, the American business model. The Americans, when they got independence in 1776, had a huge maritime trade, but they had no diplomatic service. They had no consulates. They had no embassies. So the Americans saw all this in one fell swoop, in typical American fashion. They said to people, if you want to be the American consulate, we won't pay it because we've no money, because we're a new country, but you're allowed and encouraged to make a cut of every business deal that you get involved in. So all of a sudden, Americans had consulates all over the world, okay? Like I said, they solved the problem in typical American fashion. In Waterford, who were the consular officers? All names you'd recognize, a lot of them. Robert Jacob was the Italian consular officer in Waterford. Jacob's the biscuit factory. We had Graves, as mentioned earlier on. James Graves was a Danish consular officer in Waterford. If you were a Danish captain or sailor, you had a problem, you went to see James Graves. Okay. Other names you'd recognize, Simon Newport, Newport Square, Newport Terrace, named after Sir Simon Newport. Okay. Let's see, I'm going to skip one. Why? John Hearn's on the quay. And Pope, the shipping merchants. Okay. Now, what did these guys get up to? A lot of what he did was quite monotonous, just involved trade. But nearly every week, you look at the old Waterford papers, you see mention of these guys, because they often got involved in arguments and rows. Okay. So I'll give you a couple of examples of some of the more kind of unusual incidents they got involved in. The first consular officer I'm going to talk about is a guy called Benjamin Moore. Okay? Benjamin Moore was the American and the Italian consulate officer here in Waterford. Now, Benjamin Moore got involved in kind of a dramatic court case to involve a shipload of measled meat. Okay? And what happened was an American sailor arrived in the port of Waterford with a shipload of meat. The meat was destined for the workhouse. The corporation's inspector went on board the boat and said, this meat is measly, it's gone off, it's rancid. And he threw it into the river, he ordered it thrown into the river, okay? The American captain took great offence at this because he was besmirching his professional reputation as a captain, okay? So Benjamin Moore, the American consul, got involved, there was a big court case. Benjamin Moore and the captain of a ship, okay? And the crew came ashore, the ship was in distress, the sailors went back. William Arda to give these brave fishermen a rescue to crew of the ship. And the only reason I actually picked out this case or noticed this case, it was the name of the vessel that they had rescued the guys from. The vessel was called the Spank Away. Okay? Now, I can't imagine anyone today would call a boat the Spank Away. 150 years ago, there was a French vessel called the Spank Away. Now, another case the Constable managed to get themselves involved in. Hugh Nevins was a gentleman businessman from Waterford, and he was the Russian consulate officer. Okay? In the 1860s, a Russian ship was seen in distress in Tremor Bay. It was foundering, basically it was sinking, it was taking on water. Hugh Nevins got word of this, Russian consulate ordered a boat on the quay, a steamer, to immediately make for Tremor and try and rescue the crew of this Russian ship, okay? Guys raced down to Tremor, came alongside a Russian ship, and a fist fight ensued between the Russians and the Waterford crew of the steamer, because the Russians didn't want to be rescued. The Russians knew that if the Waterford lads rescued them, they'd have to pay salvage, they'd have to pay a fee to the Waterford guys. So the Russians insisted that they weren't, in fact, sinking and were perfectly fine. The Waterford men took great offence at this, boarded the ship, a fist fight ensued, and they towed the Russians, whether they liked it or not, into the harbour of Waterford. Now, then, of course, this captain of the steamer complained to William Ardagh and said, look, these Russians are never going to pay me. I said, I basically took them ashore against their will. They're going to leave port. I'm never going to get any money. So the case went to court. And again, William Ardagh, the Russian consular officer, got involved. The judge, I think, in particularly kind of Roy's ruling, said, I'm not saying that the Russians have to pay the lads for rescuing them, but I am saying that the Russians can't leave port or somebody does. Okay? Now, the Russian captain was faced with two choices, stay in Waterford, losing money every day, or pay his rescuers. So whether he liked it or not, he paid his rescuers. Okay? Another one I'm going to give you is an example of a ship called the La Caprice. It was a French ship. And again, the French ship, La Caprice, was in distress in Waterford Harbour. A group of fishermen, again from Passageway Bay, fishermen, rowed out, rescued the crew of this ship. It was 14 guys on a small rowing boat returning to Passage East, but unfortunately the rowing boat itself was lost in the storm. And four of the fishermen who were brave enough to rescue the French guys actually drowned and lost at sea. When the French sailors and the remainder of the fishermen got ashore, they wrote to the Emperor again, Napoleon III, and explained how these three or four fishermen had been lost at sea, saving the French sailors. Napoleon III sent a personal check of £200, in the 1850s, £200 was quite a lot of money, to Waterford, and that money was given to the families of the dead sort of fishermen. Okay? So these men were gentlemen, the consuls were men of their word, men of honour, and they often got involved in shipwrecks. Now, I'll pass it on, if you don't mind passing a few of those around. I passed around a sheet with a list of five ships' names on it, okay? Now, these five ships were all lost in Waterford Harbour in the one weekend, okay? Now, the reason why I picked this, and it's kind of, I suppose, a somber team. I'm from a mariner's kind of background myself. Everyone knows Daughters and Cheap Pint, we're all fishermen and sailor. My father is basically like an Irish version of Papa, a little small guy with loads of tattoos. He's 88 and still going strong. My cousin William Doherty is down there as well, another fisherman in his day. And if you go to Dunmore East, you go to the wall in Dunmore East, you'll see two Doherty's inscribed on the wall. My uncle Joseph Doherty and my first cousin Joseph Doherty. Young Joseph Doherty was named by the brothers after the uncle that had died, and unfortunately he was lost at sea in an accident as well. So I come from a maritime background and I have a huge interest in it, and I said, this example is one weekend, five ships lost. And if you just look at some of the commentary in the paper, inside the Tower of Hope, the vessel was struck by a savage surge and went down, not a soul saved. Lost the schooner on all hands. She was seen to stagger from the force of the blow. Before she could recover, another large wave struck her, capsized her. The loss of the Tiger, both men were lost, both held together until the weather improved. Loss of the Sophia, running into the harbour, struck with such violence that her wheel was broken. She became almost unmanageable. The captain succeeded in running her aground safely. The Marta, particularly sad, the stern of a vessel, the Marta, is believed to be walked from Wexford, has washed ashore. We have heard nothing of her fate. All they found was a piece of wood with the name of the boat on it. They never found out what happened to it. But I researched the Marta and she was lost for all hands in Waterford Harbour. And she's still a wreckside today. So I suppose the reason why I picked that weekend and that is two reasons. It's given an example of how dangerous the trade was, but also shows people how busy the port was. Five vessels in one weekend wrecked in Waterford Harbour, okay? Now, on a slightly